before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and as always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of great interviews this month, so let's get started with beer news. At this year's Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival, winners were chosen in both the Winter Warmer and Barley Wine competitions. In the Winter Warmer category, Cynosure Brewing took third place with its No, a Belgian-style strong dark ale. Oscar Blues took second with its 10-Fitty Imperial Stout, and first place went to Maui Brewing's Night Diver. In the barley wine category, local favorite Cassock's Brewery of Nikiski did not take the gold in the barley wine competition for the fourth year in a row. Instead, its Buffalo Head Barley Wine took home the second place trophy. Third place went to Fremont's Brew 2000 Barley Wine, while first place went to Anchorage Brewing's Double Oaked A Deal with the Devil. This beer from Gabe Fletcher's brewery had already received much national acclaim, including being named one of the best beers of 2018 by Craft Beer and Brewing magazine. Congratulations to all the winning breweries. Skagway Brewing has announced that the grand opening of its new location will take place February 15th and 16th. As we learned last month in my interview with owner Mike Healy, the new location on Broadway represents a 200% increase in seating and a 400% increase in brewing capacity. A brand new brewery has opened for business at 3290 Pegger Road in Fairbanks. Black Spruce Brewing opened its doors in December. We'll have more details on this new venture in an interview later in the show. Some new statistics have been released on the impact of craft brewing on a state-by-state basis. Alaska ranks 6th in breweries per capita of adults, and we are 3rd in pints produced annually per adult, behind only Vermont and Delaware at 96 pints. The most recent economic impact of craft brewing in Alaska was $511 per person per year, which is 5th overall among the 50 states. There are currently over 7,000 breweries in the U.S. The 2019 Frozen River Fest is only 3 weeks away. This year's festival will take place on Saturday, February 16th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Soldotna Creek Park. It's hosted by the Soldotna Chamber of Commerce, and tickets are $20 for beer drinkers, free for non-drinkers. As always, this is a family-friendly event with live music and food on sale besides the beers on offer. For more details, look for the festival on Facebook or contact the Soldotna Chamber of Commerce. On January 23rd, Charlie Papazian, the founder and past president of the Brewers Association, turned 70 and officially retired. Bob Peace, president and CEO of the Brewers Association, issued the following statement. We would not be where we are today without Charlie Papazian. Armed with a vision, a mission, and the passion to succeed, Charlie turned his love of home brewing into a community and culture that has had profound implications for so many, both personally and professionally. His contributions are indelible and innumerable, and his legacy lives on as the Brewers Association continues to serve the community Charlie helped to create. Cheers to Charlie as he takes the next steps on his never-ending path of living and learning. In preliminary figures released today by the IWSR, the leading authority on data and analysis of the global beverage alcohol market, total alcohol volume in the U.S. declined by 0.8% last year, which is slightly worse than the 0.7% slip of the prior year. Distilled spirits were up 1.9%, and wine grew slightly by 0.4%. As beer volumes have declined, so has the category's share of the total U.S. alcohol market. In 2018, beer commanded 78.3% of U.S. alcohol volume, down from 78.9% in 2017. Consumer interest in craft beer remains healthy, however, with a 2018 increase of 4.7% and a continued rise in on-site consumption at domestic craft breweries. That's it for our news this week. Coming up in our next segment, an interview with Carrie Fristo of Black Spruce Brewing Company in Fairbanks. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday nights 7 to 9 on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. Our first interview today is with Carrie Fristo from Black Spruce Brewing Company, which just opened last month in Fairbanks. Hey, Carrie, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. So you guys are brand new. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Black Spruce Brewing and how y'all got started?
Yeah, so we just opened up on winter solstice of last month in December. So far, it's been an awesome reception from the community. At the moment, we're just kind of focusing on making sure our tap room has enough beer for the thirsty people of Fairbanks. And we have a 10-barrel brew house, 10-barrel fermenters in there.
What's your brewing background? You guys home brewers? Does anybody have any kind of commercial experience prior to this?
Yeah, so I started my brewing career in Eugene, Oregon, doing my undergrad in chemistry at the University of Oregon. Started doing some home brewing, fell in love with the kind of the art and science that goes into brewing, started doing it more and more, and was fortunate that, you know, Pacific Northwest is definitely the beer mecca for craft beer. So got exposed to a lot of different styles and brewing techniques and philosophies, and ended up getting an internship at Oakshire Brewing, doing some lab work for them. After that, I went to Scotland for a year in Edinburgh and did my master's in brewing and distilling. Worked at a couple different breweries there, worked at a really awesome whiskey and real ale bar there as well, the Bow Bar.
Oh, I've been to the Bow Bar. That's a great place to drink.
Yeah, it was really cool. Got exposed to a lot of different Scotch whiskeys, and then, of course, their rotating cask ale selection. Took me a little bit to get into the different, you know, serving style, a little bit warmer, a little bit less carbonation. But for those styles of beers and the traditional beers they're making in Scotland and UK is perfect for those, and really grew to appreciate the nuance in that serving style. Then moved back to the States, got a job at No Lie Brew House in Spokane, Washington. Started as a shift brewer, worked my way up to head brewer, and did more kind of recipe development side of things, production scheduling, ingredient ordering, kind of all that fun stuff. Pretty intense, a lot of different beers and 7-day production weeks and different environment than what we're going for here at Black Spruce. And after that, went down to Flagstaff, Arizona, and worked at Mother Road for about a year and a half, kind of doing some different wort production and working on a safety program for them and doing some lab stuff as well.
Well, that sounds like you got quite an extensive background. So tell us a little bit about the brewery as it stands right now. How many beers do you typically have on tap? And are you going for any sort of particular style or theme or brewing philosophy?
Right now, we started with three beers on tap. We had a golden ale, an IPA, and an American brown ale. And then we have released two other beers, a rye pale ale with New Zealand and Australian hops, and then a double IPA. We're working towards, you know, after we get a couple more fermenters, get our feet under us a little bit, working on having 12 beers on tap at any given time. And as far as brewing philosophy, we want to make sure that we're not resting on our laurels. We want to continuously improve and try to make, you know, tweaks to recipes as we see fit. And if they're making the beer better, then we'll continue to roll with them. So we'll have three or four beers that'll always be on tap, probably the Golden Ale, the IPA, the Brown. And those, the concept of those will always sort of stay the same. But like I said, we'll be making little tweaks here and there to really improve those beers over time. And then we'll have the Summer Somewhere, that rye pale ale on. But each batch will feature different Australian and New Zealand hops. And then hopefully once they're more widely available, we'll get some South African hops in the mix there as well. So the idea being kind of a rotating Southern Hemisphere focus on that beer.
Oh, that's a clever idea, as you say. That's when it's winter up here, it's summer down there. What are you guys looking at long-term? Obviously, like you say, right now, your capacity is so small. You're just focusing on your tap room. Do you have any plans to start distributing or packaging or anything like that?
We have a couple events in the near term. We're doing a tap takeover at Lavelle's Tap House. And when I moved, so I grew up in Fairbanks and was out of the States for a number of years, like I had mentioned, and then moved back, and Arlette and Brett, the people over at the Lavelle's Tap House, super awesome, gave me a job there. So I worked there for about a year while we were getting the brewery up and running, and, you know, really respect what they're doing and the breadth of beers that they're providing to Fairbanks. So looking forward to working with them more. So we have a tap takeover with them on February 10th, Sunday from 3 to 5. If anyone from Fairbanks is listening, come on down. So I'll have six beers on with them, and then, you know, as we go through those, continue working with them, and then a couple other accounts in town as well that we'll be distributing with. As far as kind of getting down into South Central, Southeast, it's not on our radar at this point, you know, just getting started, taking the time to be able to drive 12-hour round trip to drop off a couple half barrels probably isn't totally worth it for us right now, but in the future, we'd love to kind of sprinkle ourselves down into the community.
Well, you should at least consider coming down from one of our festivals we have. We have a couple of pretty good ones down here, the one in August and then the one that's coming up here in about 3 weeks in February. That's always fun if you haven't heard about it. Nothing like doing a beer festival outside in mid-February in Alaska.
I've heard that's really fun. Unfortunately, probably won't make it down this year, but we'll keep it on the radar for next year.
So do you guys have any ambitions in the way of, like, doing barrel-aged beers eventually or anything, you know? You mentioned you have some familiarity with cask ales. Are you going to think at some point you're going to do some, like, special cask releases or anything like that?
Right now, we actually have some barrels that just went on a barge today, so they should be up here next week. With working at Noli, Dry Fly Distilling was right next door. They shared a wall with us. So I was pretty spoiled in that we could drive our forklift around a Connex unit outside, grab some barrels, and drive them back and fill them. Unfortunately, it's not quite that easy. You know, I have to ship them to Kent and then put them on a barge and wait a little bit to get them up here. But we have some on the way that we're going to be filling a couple with an Imperial Stout and then a couple with sort of a blonde barley wine strong ale that we're doing as well. So excited to be working with them again. One of my buddies opened up a distillery, State Line Distilling, in Madison, Wisconsin, and he's got some barrel-aged aquavit and barrel-aged gin that I'm talking with him about getting some of those used barrels shipped up here probably in closer to kind of spring, summertime, and laying some beer down in those as well.
That sounds like it should be really interesting. Why don't you talk about who else is involved in this? I know you got a couple of partners up there, right, besides you?
Yes. There are three of us, and Stephanie Haskins is one of them, and she is in charge of all of our front of house operations, our sales and marketing and social media and all that good stuff. And we met in Spokane. She got a job as a sales rep for NoLive. She has good industry experience as well. And then Jake Covenden is the third partner. And he and I grew up here in Fairbanks, born about 10 days before I was. And our parents were friends. And we grew up together hanging out and have stayed friends and planned on, you know, the three of us doing this for quite a while and working on business plan and stuff. And he's in charge of all of our finance and business side of things. And he's in Wichita, Kansas right now, where his wife is doing her residency. So is working remotely and coming up for working on projects here and helping out in the tasting room and production and stuff when the opportunity arises for him.
Well, great. So if any of our listeners happen to find themselves up in Fairbanks, what are your hours and how do they find you?
So we are located off of Pegger Road. So if you're driving up the parks from down south, you just continue on the parks, go past the airport, go on the second light, take a right onto Pegger, and we're about a quarter of a mile down on the right side at 3290 Pegger Road. And right now we're open Tuesday through Friday, 3 to 8, Saturday, noon to 8. And pretty sweet relationship we have worked out with Hungry Robot, where anytime we're open, they're going to be here serving up some of their tasty wood fire pizzas.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks, Carrie, for taking the time to talk to us. We really do appreciate it. And we wish you guys every success and look forward to having you down here at some of our beer festivals in a year or two.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Take care. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9. We'll be right back with more show.
It's pick-click give time for Alaskans. When you file for the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend, you can support your favorite nonprofit organizations. Do you value public radio? Donations help KDLL provide the news, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Apply for your dividend at pfd.alaska.gov by March 31st and pick click give to help your favorite organizations. Thanks.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. In our next segment, we're going to talk about a new policy at Haynes Brewing. In the news items for last November, I reported that Haynes Brewing Company has posted a video to YouTube to announce that it had discontinued offering beer flights at the brewery. The video is entitled, Cheers to Appreciating Craft Beer. This was followed up in December by an article on craftbeer.com entitled, No Flight Zone, How One Brewery is Taking a Stand Against Trying Them All, end quote. In it, co-owners Paul Wheeler and Gene Kitayama explained their reasons for no longer offering tasting flights. This decision has caused more than a little debate in craft beer circles, though I thought I'd take a look at the pros and cons of flights in more detail. First, let's define our terms. A brewery flight is 6 to 8 small beer samples, usually about 3 or 4 ounces each, of the different beers that a brewery has on offer. The purpose is to allow new customers to experience the full spectrum of what a brewery has to offer before making a final choice. Flights have long been an option that craft breweries are expected to offer, though from the beginning there have always been breweries that chose not to do so for various reasons. So now let's look at the positive aspects of offering flights. They are popular with tourists who may only have a limited time at a given brewery but want to be able to sample more than 1 or 2 beers. They also make for lovely photos to post on Instagram, Facebook, or Yelp. Some patrons are worried that they might make a poor choice and then be stuck paying for a full pour of a beer that they do not like, so they opt for a flight to reduce that risk. From the brewery's perspective, flights are usually excellent moneymakers, allowing them to charge more per ounce than for regular 8 or 16 ounce pours. Next, let's examine the cons. First, it's difficult to truly evaluate a beer without drinking at least 5 to 6 ounces of it. My personal rule is never to review a beer that I don't have at least 6 ounces of. The small glasses that are used in flights generally warm very quickly and don't allow a proper head to develop or for the drinker to accurately experience the beer's aroma. Also, flights encourage poor tasting behavior. Here's what Gene Kitayama had to say about it. Quote, consumers want to compare beers and switch back and forth between brews within a flight, yet flavors linger and mix on their palates, carbonation and characters change at different rates, and flavors change with temperature, end quote. From a logistics point of view, flights are a real hassle for the brewery. Lots of small glasses to wash and store, and it takes a lot of extra time for the servers to pour numerous small glasses as compared to one larger glass, which can also be a real problem at busy breweries. This is not the first hard stance that Haynes Brewing has taken in the name of beer quality. If you are passing through town and decide you'd like to purchase a growler of Haynes's beer to take with you, don't bother bringing in your fancy double-insulated carbon dioxide pressurized growler. Haynes will only fill its own glass growlers and only after cleaning them in-house. If you bring in an empty Haynes growler, it will go into the to-be-cleaned bin, while your order will be put into an identical but clean growler. As Paul Wheeler told me on the subject, quote, I've heard plenty of horror stories about what can happen to growlers that aren't cleaned properly and promptly. This way, I can ensure that the experience someone has when drinking my beer is what I want it to be and not contaminated by the spoiled remnants of another beer. Judging by some of the comments posted online, you would think that Haynes Brewing had just shot the craft beer world's collective puppy. The sentiments expressed seem to boil down to, quote, how dare they try to tell me how I can purchase and consume their product? Terms like pretentious, snobby, and worse were tossed around with abandon, usually by individuals who have never been to Haynes, Alaska, and more than likely never will. I doubt seriously that reading the rants of someone in Florida about how they do business is going to cut much ice with Paul and Gene. So now that I've given you the facts of the matter, let me offer you my own personal opinions. First, I think individuals have the right to run their businesses any way they choose. If you don't like it, don't patronize them. Granted, if you happen to live in Haynes and you want to drink good craft beer, you're going to find your choices pretty limited if you refuse to go to the one craft brewery in town, but that's life. Second, I have to tip my hat to Paul and Gene for actually caring enough about the product they sell to risk losing customers in order to maintain quality. While it's become an axiom that the customer is always right, I do not agree. The customer always has the right to take his or her business elsewhere, but that doesn't mean they are correct in doing so. Finally, I think beer flights are a lousy way to experience what a brewery has to offer. With their limited pour size and almost uniform inability to allow for proper head formation, carbonation, or aromatic development, they're unable to offer even a reliable snapshot of a beer's spirit. The flavor, aroma, and character of a beer develop over time as it warms and opens up to further exploration. This short-changed experience is finished in a flash of 3 or 4 ounces. Craft beer lovers have a perceived need, or maybe it's more of an insatiable desire, to try every possible beer. It even has a name, the fear of missing out. But with over 7,000 breweries now operating in the United States, there are easily over 100,000 different beers out there to try. Faced with that number, you can be guaranteed that you will miss out. It's not humanly possible to do otherwise. So just accept it, stop worrying about missing what you can't have, and focus on enjoying what you can. When I walk into a brewery I've never visited before, I don't order a flight. I look at the menu and pick a beer in a style that I'm familiar with and enjoy, and order a 6 or 8 ounce glass. Then I sit back, take my time enjoying the beer, and make conversation with the people around me. Beer drinking should be a social experience. Tiny, messy sampler trays requiring a type of heads-down drinking, focused on shifting between a handful of overflowing glasses filled with contrasting and often conflicting flavors and aromas. It's hard to hold a conversation while drinking a sampler. In fact, it's hard to focus on much other than mixing and matching glasses, trying to keep track of the order of overpoured thimbles of beer. After I've finished my first glass, if I enjoyed it and I have the time, I'll order something different to try. Sure, I may only taste 2 or 3 beers during what may be my one and only visit to a particular brewery, but at least I will be able to truly judge what the brewer is trying to do with them. Let's face it, if the craft beer revolution stands for anything, it stands for quality over quantity. So in conclusion, I challenge you beer drinkers to just say no to flights and yes to normal sized glasses of beer. And I'd suggest that you brewers out there at least consider following in the steps of Haynes Brewing and canceling your flights. In our next segment, we'll be talking with Jim Roberts, also known as Dr. Fermento. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host Bill Howell on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Have you ever wondered how much fish we sell on the Kenai, or how much oil comes from here, what it's all worth, and what it all means? Well, we have too. That's why we created Econ 91.9, a weekly look at the Kenai Peninsula's economy, what makes it work, and who makes it work. Tune in each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for new numbers, emerging trends, and a bit of trivia. Econ 91.9, Friday mornings at 9 and again at 5, right here on KDLL, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. And for our next interview, we're extremely fortunate to be able to be speaking with the Dean of Alaska Beer Writers, the man, the legend, James Roberts, also known as Dr. Fermento. Jim, how are you doing this fine day?
Well, I am doing quite well, my friend. I've just lived through a very lively, energetic, and foamy Alaska Beer Week that took place primarily up here in Anchorage, but touched all parts of the state. I understand you had a few events down there, but don't even have to say I'm on the mend because I'm used to it. It was a good week.
Yeah, 25th anniversary for the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival, right?
That's correct. This was the ninth year for Alaska Beer Week. Beer Week stretches a week backwards, or rather 10 days back from the last day of it, which it was, you know, was Sunday. But in reality, Beer Week started on January 11th and sort of officially ended on Sunday the 20th. But during that time, upwards of 75 different self-monitored, self-controlled events from the top of the state to the bottom of the state took place. I indulged in all of those. And, of course, the capstone event for Alaska Beer Week is the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival, which, as you are so correct, turned 25 this year. And this was noted, I emceed the kickoff, the Beer Week kickoff at Humpy's on Friday night and spoke to that. And also mentioned that this year is Humpy's 25th anniversary as well. They will be celebrating that, I believe, on solstice this year in June, even though the day that they officially opened was January 13th. So two big celebrations that were acknowledged there, but in reality, the big event in the most immediate term was the Beer and Barley Wine Festival.
Well, you've been up here to see a lot of this. Like, I think you've been up here for four decades, right?
Yeah, I got up here. It'll be, I think, 40 this year, I guess. I got up here in 79, and so I've watched it sort of evolve.
I was going to say, you've seen it all. Just missed Prinsbrow, but everything else since then, you've been here for, right?
Well, since then, correct. You know, beer history in Alaska, certainly you being the expert on that, goes way, way back. But yeah, the week I got up here in November of 79, and when the car arrived and we got the car from the Port of Anchorage, we did some driving around, and as I was driving northbound on the Seward Highway passing Huffman, I looked up to the left and I said, my goodness, that certainly looks like a brewery to me. And with my fine-tuned, rather large nose, the smell of hops and malt also sort of reinforced my suspicion, but I couldn't go up there that day. Came back a week later, and it was closed.
And as I said earlier, you're the Dean of Alaska Beer Writers because you've been writing for your column, your weekly column for the Anchorage Press, what, 20 years now?
Actually, 22. It'll be 22 this year. So back even before that, I had joined the Great Northern Brewers Homebrew Club here in Anchorage. Actually learned how to brew my first beer on a guy's stove in his garage as part of a lesson, as part of joining the club. And the club was fairly young at that point. And the second meeting that I attended was, the guest speaker there was Jeff Larson of Alaskan Brewing Company, and they had just opened. And you fast forward, I grew a little bit in the homebrew club, and in 92, 93, I actually ran it. And that's where I started really technically writing about beer, because back then when you were the newsletter editor, that just meant you wrote the whole stinking thing. And so as I wrote it for a while, I got contacted by the Anchorage Press, and the editor at the time said, hey, we heard you write about beer, which was a stretch, and said we lost our beer writer, and we were wondering if you'd be interested in becoming our contributing columnist. And I said, well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I would. And they said, okay, send us three pieces that you've written. So I wrote one, sent them two, which was just two homebrew articles that I wrote, and never heard from them again and was convinced that I totally sucked. But 3 months later, fully 3 months later, I got the call from the editor, and he said, hey, we really like your work, and we really like the original piece you wrote. And if you'll go ahead and commit to a Thursday deadline or a Friday deadline prior to the following Thursday's publication, we'll put you on as a contributing columnist. And I went into that with a big gulp, saying I don't really like commitments, but I thought it would be good to have my writing professionally edited and getting the back writing. So I engaged with, thought I'd maybe last a year, maybe not. Figured if I sucked, they'd run me off, and if I didn't like it, I'd quit. 5 years went by, and I said, well, this ain't going so bad. 10 years went by, 15 years went by, and I swore I was going to put down the pen or push the keyboard aside at year 20. I said, that's a long run. You know, it's probably a good point in my life to stop writing. And I had nightmares. I said, I don't know what my life would be if I wasn't writing about beer. And with a guaranteed pulpit of a weekly article every week, I forge ahead.
See, you discovered the other thing about writing. You don't get paid very much, but you just can't stop.
Yep.
It's kind of like an addiction.
Well, really, so. I feel privileged. I feel privileged to have a pulpit in which I can wax prophetic on the intense quality and sophistication of the beers in our state. I think it's a privilege. I am, as much as I'm a beer drinker, I'm a beer ambassador, because I think we have just an incredibly good beer industry up here. And it seems to be a little under-heralded to me. So I consider it a privilege, I think, just like you.
Yeah, I always say we have the best beers in the world and nobody's drunk. You know, once again, from your perspective of somebody who has seen it, what would be your assessment for our future, you know, the next few years? Where do you think the industry and the state is headed? I mean, obviously, we've been on a real strong upward trajectory since about, I would say, around 2006, when they finally, the legislature finally let us have tap rooms and tap room sales. We've been on a real upward trajectory. Earlier in the show, we had an interview with Black Spruce Brewing that just opened in Fairbanks. So where do you see us going in the next few years?
Well, Bill, the way I see it is, I think, you know, we always like to say there's plenty of room for more craft beer in Alaska, but any beer lover or consumer would naturally say that. Will the industry support it? Are there enough pallets around to support more breweries in Alaska? Well, that depends. It's a really that depends answer. But what I will say is, what I think we're going to see is the footprint of the average brewery is going to become smaller. Rather than see sprawling estates like Alaskan Brewing Company cropping up all over the place and big tall buildings like King Street, massive glorified art facilities like Anchorage Brewing Company, just to name what we have here, St. Elias down your way, Silver Gulch up north, as some of our larger breweries. I think what we're going to see is a smaller footprint. What I think we're going to see is, we're going to start to emulate where beer really got its roots back in Europe, where you're going to see small breweries crop up in neighborhoods. And you're already seeing this happen with Gacona Brewing Company in Gacona. Fiercely protected by its residents, Same thing with Kodiak Island Brewing Company. Ben Milstein, the brewer there, told me, I don't think I could ever close my brewery. And I said, why not? And they said, the citizens won't let me. Homer Brewing Company, same way. With 40 breweries now, 41, I think we just moved through our 41st brewery in the state, we could become saturated in the larger metropolitan areas if people try to build those large-style breweries. You might see it. Fairbanks, with its population, has got three. Your reference to Black Spruce being one of the newest ones. And, you know, we could see saturation, like I said, in the bigger areas. But I think there's a lot of room for the pico and sub-micro size breweries. This is what you're seeing happening in the lower 48. You go to San Francisco, and to put in a facility like an Anchorage Brewing Company again, the land itself would be cost prohibited. So what you're seeing is small 1- and 2-barrel breweries starting up in older, thinner, taller buildings, and they augment that scant amount of beer with guest beers from other nearby neighborhood nanos and micros. So it's a really fascinating, blooming thing out there, and I think Anchorage, we're always behind what's going on in the lower 48, so if you watch beer in the lower 48, you're getting a predictor of what beer may look like up here in, say, 5, maybe 10 years. So
I would tend to agree with that, because when people ask me, you know, are we in a bubble? Is beer oversold? I always ask the question, well, what kind of brewery do you want to have? If you want to have a small neighborhood brewery, whether it's a brew pub or just a small place like your Barnaby Brewing Company or any of these newer ones that have opened, where you are basically going to sell all your beer out of your tap room, there's room for one of those just about on every corner. But as soon as you say, oh, I'm going to distribute my beer, well, now you have to ask the question of where are you going to get the shelf space? Who's going to give up shelf space in the liquor store for you to put your beer in its place? Where are you going to get the taps at the restaurants and the bars? Whose tap are you going to take? Ideally, you'd take away Anheuser-Busch's tap and put a local craft beer on, but more likely you're going to be fighting for the limited number of taps that are out there available that currently have Alaskan and Midnight Sun and Denali and Silver Gulch and all these other guys who are distributing. So, yeah, I would agree with you that the place where there's room for growth now is at the bottom, the small local breweries. To go back to what Ben Milstein always says from Kodiak, if your brewery is like your local bakery, you're fine. You know, if you're just baking bread for your local neighborhood, you're not trying to ship it all over the state, then you're okay.
You're right. There was another good example there, and you hit the nail on the head. If your aspirations are for distribution, even locally, I think that any liquor store could probably give you some facing by pushing some bottles around or putting you on an end cap or something. Where the real struggle comes is when you do go into that publican and try to peddle your wares, and the publican has to make two very difficult decisions. The beer he just served me, this being the new brewer, may be tasty to me, and that's one thing. Will it be tasty tomorrow, and will my customers like it? But the most difficult decision that publican's going to have to make is, who am I going to piss off by taking their beer offline? Whereas floor space is generally unlimited, tap handles are a finite number across the state. You could quantify them. So you're exactly right on that. But on the social side of that, again, your example of Ben Milstein is very poignant. When you talk to Karen Berger of Homer Brewing Company, who I bugged for years in my early years, Homer's been around 20 years, and said, hey, I love your Red Knot Scottish. I love a couple of these beers that you make. How come we can't get them in Anchorage? And she was very quick to answer, because I don't make beer for Anchorage. Anchorage doesn't come down here and buy my beer. My neighbors do. And I'm not going to be in the business to supplying a pallet up there that I don't need, because I'm perfectly happy making beer for my neighbors. And I think you probably heard that from Black Spruce. That's their sort of mantra too. And I think they want more control over distribution. They're not interested in people that don't want to take care of beer. So good points.
Yeah, that's a lot of brewers I've heard, you know, express that, whether it's Paul Wheeler down in Haines or Bobby Wilken up in Hoodoo, hey, if I'm selling everything out of my tap room, then I control it. I know it's being treated right. I know it's I'm serving quality beer that tastes the way I want it to taste. Whereas as soon as you hand it off to a distributor, you're basically crossing your fingers and hoping that they and the eventual retailer are going to treat it right, serve it through clean tap lines and clean glasses, you know, because you're basically putting your reputation in somebody else's hands when you do that. And I know brewers really, really hate that.
The way I explain it is I said the further away you get from the brewery, the less you're getting what the brewer intended. Right. And there's parts of that that can be controlled. Parts of that can't be controlled. Look at Gabe Fletcher, universally successful at Anchorage Brewing Company. He is very fastidious about where his beer goes, to the point where you sign a written agreement with them that it won't sit on the shelf for more than X amount of weeks, depending on the beer, and it varies by beer. So when you see an Anchorage Brewing Company on beer on tap or in cans, you know that there's a lot of thought by Gabe, is it worth the risk of releasing this beer to that facility? So, but yeah, you know, you find out that these smaller breweries, although they become very geocentric, almost down to the neighborhood level, any brewery that opens today, it's an interesting phenomenon. They instantly garner a cult following. It's a really fascinating phenomenon to me. And you go to some of the, you go to any different brewery in there, and you'll see a clientele, and they act like they own part of that brewery, and that's part of what makes it rich and fun for the consumer. They feel like they're part of it.
Well, hey, Jim, thank you so much for taking time out to chat with us. Congratulations on your first 22 years, and I look forward to the next 22 years of you writing.
You got it. Next time you're up, the first pint's on me, buddy.
All right, my friend. Well, hey, you have a great time, and thanks again for taking time to talk with us.
You bet. Anytime, Bill. Keep doing the good work down there.
All righty. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.